Cultivated Being Podcast.
Welcome to the Cultivated Being Podcast. I'm one of your hosts. My name is Dr. Nick. This is my brother, Dr. Jake. We are brothers. And I always skip Jake's talk time to talk. We are brothers, yeah. And we're doctors, and we're here on our weekly chat to catch up on what's going on in the world, what's going on in the news, what's going on with health, how to get people to cultivate their beings and, you know, heal, progress, and grow in life right now. So, Jake, what's up?
Yes, Nick, I'm here. Thanks for introducing me. That was a great introduction, as always. What does it mean to cultivate your being to you, Nick?
Well,
let's get down to the nitty gritty.
So cultivate the being. I mean, we're all growth oriented by our nature. Mm. Even when our conscious mind isn't growth oriented, our subconscious mind is growth oriented. This is why Carl Jung, if you ever heard of that guy.
Or Jung, depends who you ask.
Yeah. Don't ask me because I'm the worst at anything.
Heard it both ways. A bunny's going by. Sorry to be distracted. I'm podcasting outside. Nick didn't mention it. I don't know if Nick's going to post this video. I keep thinking he's going to post our videos to YouTube. But I'm out in my yard and there's a bunny right out in front of me. Nick, what a magical world. Speaking of nature and growth, go on.
Well, yeah. So Carl Jung said that our subconscious mind will try to get us to grow, even when our conscious mind isn't, which I thought was an interesting idea, but.
Oh man, that's a whole podcast topic on its own.
Yeah. We should
talking about right like projection and we're talking. Okay.
Yeah.
Great topic.
But growth is important. We're meant to grow. We're supposed to grow. We're not growing to be better. Because better than, less than is a duality that we want to avoid. That's a judgment based off of rigid structures of perhaps morality or social complexes. What we're trying to do is, especially on this podcast, we're trying to unfold our inner nature so that our outer nature is healthy and well. That we're working at the insides, planting the seeds of health and physical, mental, emotional prosperity.
Exactly. And what does cultivate mean? It means essentially to prepare the earth for growth. It means to like dig up and churn the earth, right? So, you know, a loose translation is to prepare the earth for growth, for life. That's what we're doing. We're talking about soil preparation of life. This is the science of living well. That's what you want. You're at the right podcast. If you just like me and Nick because we're friends or family, great. We're thankful that you guys listen to this. But this is the pod for, you know, we'll break down the science of living well. And Nick, it's great to see you. I love podcasting with you. This is the best part. This is the best part of the week.
This is the best. And speaking of weeks, that's my terrible segue.
You got to work on your segues.
Speaking of weeks, this has been a week. Not like the saying goes where it's been really dramatic or whatever kind of a week. No, this has just literally been chronologically a week.
It's been 7 days.
It has been 7 days. So I want to talk about some stuff that has happened in those last 7 days.
Oh, Nick, keeping me on edge.
Which comes kind of sort of to our topic, our segment on the show called What the News Told Me.
We're going right to What the News Told Me. Okay.
Well,
I was going to do a fun health fact, but that was our first segment.
Well, how are we going to transition to that now?
I don't know. You have to edit this. Speaking of what's in the news, health facts. That's the segue, nice. Nick. I'm taking.
Well done.
I'm taking a page out of the chapter you wrote on segues.
So, what's your health fact, Jake?
Nick, I just thought it was interesting how I've been told in my life that there's more neurons in your gut than in your brain. And I was like, right on. I like that. I like that theory. Have you been told that?
I have been told that, but
it's not true.
It's not true. Not even close.
So there's 100 million neurons in your gut, approximately, and that's a lot of neurons. So your gut's highly sensory. A lot of those neurons aren't necessarily for necessarily receiving information from your senses. So it's not necessarily a lot of like brains communicating with your gut. I think like 90% of those neurons are designed for sending information to your brain. But 100 million, I mean, that's a lot. So I understand if people want to call the gut your second brain, because it's like, I don't know, I'd say like an extension of your brain is fair to say.
I think the best way of saying it is okay. It has the most neurons outside of your central nervous system.
It has more than your spine. I mean, your like brain's, yeah. It has more than, well, let's not get into that. What I want to say is your brain has like just under 100 billion neurons.
Yeah.
So 100 million versus just under 100 billion. So it's not really close, but nonetheless, the brain senses a lot. And it's interesting to think about that, because what exactly is it sensing?
That is a great question.
Because you're not feeling everything that's happening down there. That would be awful. you don't want to feel that.
Yeah. Well, I know that there are a lot of nerve cells down there to help control and modulate the immune system response.
There's a ton. And a lot of that is connected to your microbiome. So a lot of those neurons, from my understanding, is communication with the bacteria. So there's receptors for the biochemical transmitters coming from these microbes living within our gut, which is pretty cool. So it's like your gut's almost like the internet, like bacteria to brain, which is really cool, but also the source of certain amount of pathologies or dysfunction. When you have dysbiosis, right? So when your microbiome's off, the information you're getting from your gut directly to your brain can be off. And a lot of your serotonin's coming from your gut too. So like your gut can very much affect your mood. Comments?
Yeah.
What do you think, Nick?
This is a great topic, because it is definitely true that one fantastic approach to improving your brain health is to improve your gut health, and vice versa.
So just,
yeah,
just eat some yogurt. Is that all I got to do?
You can do that, probably with some regularity. They say like a therapeutic dosage of healthy gut bacteria is 30 billion units.
And you're not going to get that in a cup of yogurt.
True. So, I mean, if you're having like a lot of yogurt for a week, that probably would help an enormous amount, especially with, you know, you have natural yogurts, natural ways of getting good, healthy gut bacteria is good. It's good. That's, they like it that way, but they're healthy gut bacteria when it's naturally kind of made. However, if you have had statistically bad gut health, / bad brain health, and you want to give it a boost pretty quickly, I would do high dosages. Now, I will say I have come across some supplements that seem to work really well that don't have high dosages, but they have like a crazy amount of, you know, different healthy gut bacteria, and that seems to work also, but I haven't seen any studies about that.
So yeah, there's a unit. So there's like total amounts of microbes. So like you'll see yours would be like 5 billion, 10 billion, you know, 30 billion, 50 billion. And then they'll list the variety. And variety does matter, but it's not just about probiotics. It's also about prebiotics. Like those things need to eat something. So if you're planting a garden, it's one thing to plant seeds, but if you're not fertilizing the seeds, don't expect great growth. And that's the other thing about healing the gut microbes. So you need the prebiotics, like the good bacteria food, as well as the bacteria themselves.
To go off of that, one thing that I have seen, I don't know how many people we have on our show who are currently keto right now.
Like seven. I did a survey.
Or maybe some paleo, low carb people on the show. Our gut bacteria loves carbs, man. It loves carbs.
What kind of carbs? Like Pop-Tarts?
No.
Specifically, low fat Pop-Tarts?
Exactly. How did you know that?
Just a guess.
Toaster strudels mainly. But, oh, man, I'm getting hungry now.
Yeah, you've lost me now. I'm only thinking about toaster strudels.
Well, so one thing I do recommend for people who are doing that is to take, you can get supplements that have short chain fatty acids. Which you find in like white rice. And so you can just supplement that and your gut bacteria might go. So the reason I'm bringing this up,
can you eat white rice?
You can absolutely eat it.
Cause that seems like a win-win.
No, totally. I'm just saying, because there's some people who are like, I have such a healthy diet. I don't have anything bad and blah, blah, blah. And my gut health isn't great. Mm-hmm. There's a reason for that. Okay. People, there's a reason. But here's an interesting thing. So intestinal permeability is a thing that Jake and I know quite well, and a lot of people probably don't know. It's called leaky gut. Maybe you've heard of it.
Intestinal permeability is not called leaky gut. All intestines are permeable. When it becomes too permeable, meaning there's just like big old gaps blasted in your gut by inflammation, that would be leaky gut.
Well, okay, semantics here. Intestinal permeability is the scientific.
This podcast
name.
Is about exactitude. If we're about anything, Nick,
yeah,
that's what we stand by.
Well, it's kind of like this, okay? I'm gonna create a very controversial analogy here. It's like the border. Okay.
Nick, I'm offended already.
Well, we'll put it like this. It's like the Santa Cruz Harbor, right?
Ooh, okay.
Not very big. It can get, you know, sailboats, like two sailboats can pass going back and forth. Maybe a, you know, fishing boat, trolley, whatever can go past.
Like that's racist.
I changed it because I was like, why am I going to the other?
Oh, I had that one in the chamber already. Sorry. I forgot you changed the analogy.
So these things are meant to pass. Same thing with broken down food, right? Our cells are meant to, our intestinal cells have little doors. They're like, ooh, sodium, yummy. Take that, you know, vitamin A, whatever. Here's a fat cell. Here's a whatever. They can have these things pass through. But intestinal permeability is the scientific name for leaky gut, where the zonulin particles that hold the cell together break apart. And now cruise ship liners are coming in and just dumping all kinds of whatever. Do you get the analogy here, or are you just frozen? So I made a joke about Jake being frozen, and he was. So this is like 15 minutes later. We're back. Okay. So basically, the analogy is way longer than it should have been, but our gut, the zonulin breaks apart, the cells spread apart, and now these big particles that are like food particles start to get into our bloodstream, and our body makes immune cells to kill that, which is why people start to have food sensitivities. There you go. That's the food sensitivity talk. Now, the interesting thing is, if anyone gets a brain injury, it's been shown that within 2 hours of a brain injury, people start to have leaky gut syndrome.
Whoa, tell me about this.
That was the whole fact, but...
Nick, tell me about it again or slower.
Okay.
Or better.
So, yeah, just to kind of repeat that. People have brain injuries all the time. I mean, you can have brain injury from a football thing, or that's what happened to me, rugby a couple times. Maybe some other brain injuries I didn't know about. Or you could get in a car accident, or you can, as a kid, you can fall. Maybe you're 2 years old, like our sister Maura, and you fall off a bed, probably hurt your brain at some point down the way. Or you can get a toxic load into your brain. Sometimes this happens in the form of vaccine injury, unfortunately. So these are all ways that people can have brain trauma. And within 2 hours of brain trauma, people start to develop leaky gut syndrome. This is totally valid. So anyways, this is an example why, you know, you have a kid who has ADHD, which is kind of usually can be a result of brain trauma. And that kid tends to have a lot of food reactions.
So ADHD and food sensitivities go hand in hand.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. You almost always see that. And the parent will start to try to help their kid have better brain health by eliminating certain things from the diet. See this with, you know, you'll see this sometimes with autism. You'll see this definitely, like I have a bunch of kids with eczema. This is a slightly different, but the kid will have a ton. I mean, it could be exactly the same, right? Because your skin, we know embryologically, is the same thing as your nervous system. It starts the same and it kind of differentiates. So that happens. And so the kid can have, maybe they had a vaccine injury, for instance, and now they have both leaky gut and eczema. And the parent notices what? Of course, the eczema. And they start to treat the eczema because they're like, it must be, they're having some kind of reaction to, they're having an allergic reaction. Maybe it's to soaps or whatever, but they end up finding that, oh, if I take, the mom takes out gluten from her diet, the baby's skin does better. That's interesting. Mm-hmm. Well, you could continue to trace that back to the fact that this baby might have a brain injury, and treating the neurology will actually clear up both the skin and the gut issues. Now, maybe the baby was, I'm literally describing two different patients I had in this last month. The baby is constipated and they have eczema and they have all these food reactions. Things seem to get worse with gluten or whatever, because the baby has leaky gut and they probably have a brain injury, and it's also causing skin issues. And you start to heal the brain and the skin issues go away, that you'll notice immediately that, like, following day you start to treat the brain and the baby is like, oh, the baby had about 2 bowel movements today. And you're like, oh, that's cool. And then every day after that, you're like, wow, every day the baby's having regular bowel movements. And then you notice at the end of the week, man, their skin looks so much better. Wow. And then maybe at the end of the week, they're not colicky anymore. Their mood's a little bit better. They're sleeping through the night. Wow. Cool. It all goes together. People don't realize this about themselves, but a lot of people try to help treat all kinds of issues in their body by having a better diet and realizing that they might have a food sensitivity. So they start to eliminate certain foods from their diet and they get better. That's cool. That's the mechanism behind that.
Well, how do you heal from that? So you can say, like, okay, there's the food sensitivity, can't have soy or peanuts or corn or eggs or gluten or dairy. But is there a way to be like, I'm going to just heal the body, heal the gut, heal the brain, and then I can reintroduce dairy into my diet. I can reintroduce gluten. Is that a thing?
Mm-hmm. Totally. I would say one of the main connecting factors is the vagal nerve, which is what controls most things in the gut. And the vagus nerve is a huge nerve and it connects to all, whatever, 26 feet of your gut. That's the small intestine and then also the large intestine it connects with. So if you do vagal stimulation, you'll start to not only send blood, but also stimulation to the vagus nerve. You'll send blood to the gut. The gut will start to activate and start to repair the gut wall, the mucosal membrane. And then you also, you probably need to do a bunch of gut stuff as well. And that involves repairing the gut lining. Okay. It's not just about, okay, we could eliminate foods. That's powerful. That's effective because inflammation goes down in the body. But now we also need to heal that gut lining when the inflammation's down. And there's lots of things that do that. I would get something that is specifically designed for that because it works better. Right. But, you know, I guess two things that people can buy at a store that would help. Bone broth seems to help. It's got lots of collagen, repairs gut lining, but so does aloe juice. You can buy aloe juice and it does really well with that. Some vitamins and some nutrients as well. Those are all needed for repair. Anytime you're remodeling your body, you need all the minerals and you need all the vitamins. So that's super important.
What do you think about fasting?
Fasting is extremely effective at healing, at allowing your body to heal without interruption. It is shown to decrease lots of inflammation. And it is shown to have lasting benefits as far as other things go, treatments and therapies, they don't seem to have as long lasting benefits. So fasting is always a good thing. Obviously, it depends where you're at in your life. And if you're, you know, if you can pull it, if you could swing it off, like do a long-term fast or something like that would probably be really good. I wouldn't say like, short-term fasting would necessarily be really good to heal your gut.
Well, it can. I think there's a way. So the truth is your gut lining replaces itself approximately every 3 days, meaning your gut lining is one of the tissues in your body that's regenerating very quickly. And it has to be because like a lot of bad stuff happens to it, you know? Totally. So it has to be pretty resilient. Now, and then, and you know this, like if you get a cut in your mouth or something, your tongue, like it heals faster than like cuts on your skin. And that's the difference between squamous and non-squamous epithelial tissue. Nick, remember histology classes? Do you remember that?
Well done, Jake. Well,
I remember that. Anyway, there you go. It regenerates pretty quickly. And the thing is, like, if you're trying to heal gut, if you're trying to heal, like, abrasions or lesions in your gut, healthy things, for example, like eating, like, robust vegetarian salads, maybe like a kale salad, you know, maybe your cabbage family, maybe Brussels sprouts, maybe broccoli. Like, these things are healthy to do, but they're difficult for your gut. It's challenging. It's almost like eating, you know, sandpaper. If you have lesions in your gut, like these things are fairly abrasive and they're also challenging to break down. And for the most part, you don't even break them down. So if you are trying to heal leaky gut, some healthy activities that you might be like, I don't feel well, I feel sick, I'm just going to go like raw vegan. I'm going to eat raw vegetables. While in some cases that's a great idea, in some cases that might actually make it more challenging for your body to heal. Does that make sense to you, Nick? Do you align with that?
Yeah.
So while I do appreciate a raw vegan way of eating as opposed to other ones, if you have an inflamed gut, like eating raw vegetables can be really damaging to your gut, as nutritious as they can be.
This is totally me all the way. I thought that was healthy and I was doing it and my gut was not getting better until a doctor told me that. He's like, you should probably have all your veggies cooked for a while. And I was like, okay. And that, man, that was so significant.
I know that for me personally. So one of my favorite, like, quote unquote, healthy dishes, I'm using finger quotations, it's just like a little bit of bacon. And then I like saute some like halved Brussels sprouts and I flavor them in other ways. We don't need to get into the recipe unless you want me to.
Is it a secret?
No, it's just, you know, it's like a little bit of bacon, a lot of Brussels sprouts, you know, salt, pepper, maybe garlic, maybe vinegar, olive oil, whatever. But the point is, if I cook the Brussels sprouts to al dente, so like very chewy, it might be a rough night for me. My gut might wake me up in the middle of the night and be like, this is hard.
Yeah.
So many Brussels sprouts that I have to deal with. But if I like really cook those bad boys down, you know, where they're like, they're not al dente, they just kind of melt in your mouth. It's less pleasing for me to eat, if I'm being honest. I'd rather have the chew, that like meaty chew that Brussels sprouts mm-hmm. can offer. But I have a much more pleasant night and morning. That makes sense. Do I need to elaborate?
No, I get it. Crystal clear, man.
If you want me to elaborate, listeners, email Nick and he'll fill in the blanks.
Yeah. So, anyways, so this is a really long, we just talked
about. That was our segment on the news, which is supposed to be 5 minutes long. No, wait, not on the news. That's our fun health fact.
That's our fun health fact.
What did the news tell us?
Yeah. So going off of mucosal health, okay. This is my other segue here. Going off
right out of that, right out of your chapter on segues podcasting.
This is pretty good. People should be taking notes if they're podcasters out there. So I have been reading tons of research that's been pouring out about COVID. The other night, I don't know, I couldn't sleep and I literally spent all night reading research. I thought it would put me to bed, but I just kept reading. So I'm like 8 hours of research deep right now. I'm not talking news articles. I'm not talking anything like that. I'm talking about published research about the virus and how it interacts with the body. And I found out that, well, obviously the big place that it's happening is in the membranes, the mucous membranes of our body. And so one thing that we really can do to help prevent some serious issue is to build up resilience in our immune aspects of our mucus. So mouth, nose, throat, lungs, gut. There are some people who are getting COVID who have gut symptoms and they don't have any coughing or anything. So that's something important to know. But one of the really important things, Dr. Kara Fitzgerald posted, she has, her and a couple other doctors, they just posted this research this last week, it published it. And I guess the number one preventative way, apparently you can prevent mortal aspects, the serious aspects of COVID. And they found out the big similarity with all the people who are dying with COVID. So the people who seem to get the COVID and they get the serious symptoms and it's life-threatening. Do you want to know what it is?
Nick, I'm dying. Gotta tell me, what is it?
Inflammation markers.
Oh, I already knew that.
Yeah. So homocysteine, CRP, these prostaglandin, these things that mark how inflamed we are is the big precursor, the big deciding factor of how bad COVID is going to be for us. Whether you're going to be the person who gets COVID and doesn't know about it, the person who gets COVID or the person who gets COVID and they're like, they get minor symptoms versus the one who's in the hospital. And guess what, people? You can, on your own, lower your inflammation.
Impossible.
It's very possible.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah.
How so, Nick?
Well, we've talked a lot about different ways of lowering your inflammation. I'd say the three most practical ways for most people, be taking that omega-3.
Boom. Number one.
Do it.
Yeah. Can I be more specific?
Mm-hmm.
Don't be taking an alpha lipoic acid. Don't take ALA. You want your DHA or your EPA. Do you concur, Nick?
I absolutely concur with that. They are directly related with the amount of inflammation in your body. It's directly related. So as an example, you can measure inflammation. This is one of the popular ways that you can measure inflammation. Prostaglandin 1 versus prostaglandin 2.
That sounds too complicated. Okay. Dumb it down for me.
We'll put it this way. Omega 3 versus omega 6 in your body.
I'm following.
So this as a ratio can be measured to denote how much inflammation you have in your body. Omega 6, most people have way more of those versus omega 3. If you're under 10 omega 6s to 1 omega 3, you're probably like super healthy anyways.
Which is like being generous. So yeah. Like science would say like you want to be like 2 to 1, not 10 to 1. 3 to 1 maybe, omega 6 to omega 3. But so 10 to 1, that's generous. And I think that gives us some leeway. But the average American, the data, I've seen different reports from like 18 to 1 to 30 to 1 is the average American, omega 6 to omega 3.
Yeah. So,
and we know, hold on, we know we have global listeners. We see you out there. I wish I could greet you in your native tongue to each one of you. But Nick and I have gone global. No big deal. But we do talk about America a lot because those are the stats that we're most familiar with. So
yeah,
got to bear with us.
Some, there are a couple of countries who have lower on average and they tend to be high fish eating countries. Like, I don't know, somewhere in Scandinavia and then Japan, apparently they have better ratios. Antarctica. Yeah. If you're a penguin, or seasonally, you're a, you know, a blue whale or something hanging out in Antarctica, you probably have pretty good ratios.
Very interesting. Okay, that's one. So get your omega-3s up. What's another one?
This is one that I would go to just statistically. Having low vitamin D makes you more prone to have high inflammation.
Absolutely. And that,
that could be kind of indirect for some people, and people are like, that doesn't correlate, but
there's some mainstream studies coming out now that it's like the mortality rates, people like the people that have succumbed to COVID-19 deaths, low vitamin D, and that, and those studies are becoming mainstream. So I don't know. Hoard your vitamin D, people. I don't mean to be a panic.
Yeah.
I don't mean to do that.
Yeah. Screw toilet paper. That's what you need. You need your.
Yeah. Hoard your vitamin D3 specifically. Don't get your D1 or D2s. Don't bother with those. Vitamin D3. Totally. But yeah, that's my concern. Actually, I was meaning to order some for my family specific, but I wouldn't be surprised if there was like a vitamin D3 shortage, because as these studies start to matriculate into like the mainstream consciousness, like people that are sufficient vitamin D are not dying from COVID-19.
Right. Yeah. And not to mention, I mean, we've talked about this before. Vitamin D is basically a hormone. It's misnomered as a vitamin.
It's like a pre-hormone.
It's like a hormone because you make it. Vitamins you don't make. You do not manufacture your own vitamins in your body. That's why we call them vitamins, but you do make vitamin D. However, in small quantities, unless you're outside all the time along the equator, which is maybe how we were evolved to be, and we just kind of haven't evolved beyond that at this point yet.
We wandered off.
So I say those are my two biggest bangs for the buck, man. You can buy like nice vitamin D3 for like $15 probably.
I got one.
Okay.
One way to throw off your prostaglandin 2 to 1 ratio or your inflammation ratio. Just be super stressed.
Mm.
Or inject yourself with cortisol. Either one would do the job.
Mm-hmm.
All right, Nick?
Yeah.
Nick just looks at me sometimes. So cortisol is your like primary stress hormone that you secrete if your nervous system indicates like maybe I'm under some kind of potential threat. And that hormone's very useful when you are actually in danger, but if you're not, it can be pretty damaging. And if you're secreting that hormone over long periods of time, it can be highly damaging. And that hormone in and of itself is very inflammatory because its job really is to liberate stored glucose from your bloodstream or into your bloodstream. So liberate it out of your tissue into your bloodstream. And that process is pretty inflammatory. And if you're running from a tiger or you're just got to fight for your life or whatever, it's pretty good. You'll use up that glucose that has been recently liberated into your into your bloodstream. But if you're just like sitting at your desk or on your couch or in your bed at night, you're spiking your blood sugar unnecessarily, and your body's going to then secrete insulin to drive that glucose back into your cells. And insulin's also very inflammatory. So a great way to be too inflamed is being very stressed. A good way to be really stressed is to be like fearful about stuff. So comments, Nick.
Dude, I don't have to add to that. That was beautiful.
Okay. So can I hypothesize why this inflammation imbalance is more deadly?
By all means.
Okay, so let's talk about how your immune system works. I think we've talked about this in pods, but I have so many conversations, Nick. I can't keep track of the ones I have with you. So correct me or edit this out. Okay, either one. But here's the deal. Like, how does your immune system work ultimately? How do you fundamentally fight a virus?
This is rhetorical.
No, I'll answer it. So unless you want to. All right, I'll do it. So a virus enters into your system through like this instance, like mucous membranes. It gets into a cell and it starts to replicate and it destroys the cell. So we're talking about not a global infection, just an individual cell that got the virus and now it's dead. Okay. So what that happens, the process of a cell dying and being infected by a virus is going to release histamines into the surrounding tissue, okay? And histamines are essentially like the fundamental inflammatory cytokines, can I say that, or just say like chemicals, okay? And that inflammation attracts certain cells like, you know, your phagocytes, right? So these cells that come in, like think little Pac-Man, and they go like they eat up the damaged tissue from the destroyed cell. And then while eating it, if they eat a virus, then they send out a signal through your nervous system, essentially. So through your blood, through your nervous system to the hypothalamus, and you send this, like you mount this total immune response, and you send out like these monocytes, these lymphocytes, these killer T cells, and then that's like when the robust immune system kicks in. Now, if you're highly inflamed already from a poor diet, from being overstressed, low omega-3 to omega-6 ratio, low vitamin D, etc., then that initial communication pathway of like, hey, the cell's damaged and here's some inflammation, which is supposed to draw attention to the cell, is just not going to happen. There's no communication. So I guess an analogy, if I'm thinking of it right now, like Nick, you and I are in a room, you know, typical room, like the one you're in maybe. Can you imagine?
All right,
so Nick's imagining. Okay. So we're having a conversation. I tell you something. I'm like, hey, Nick, I'm not okay. Help me, right? You'd get that, right? Mm-hmm. But if we're like a rock concert and there's just a ton of noise, you wouldn't hear me, right?
Yeah.
I'd have to shout at you, literally, like in your ear, if you want to hear what I'm saying. And that's kind of the idea of like being too inflamed. Your nervous system can't work. The communication lines are drowned out.
Mm-hmm.
So you need that, like inflammation's not bad. Like In this story, inflammation is really important. Your ability to be inflamed is really important for your immune system to work properly. But if you're hyperinflamed, the communication pathways are going to break down. Like the cells and your immune system, like the white blood cells, the phagocytes, the macrophages, they just can't pick up on the signals very clearly because there's too much noise. Is that pretty good, Nick?
That was well done. Thank you. Well,
I need that affirmation.
I think that's a wrap for our first two segments of the show. And I got to say, I don't have a lot of steam.
No, that's fine.
For the third segment.
No, we don't have to. In my mind, I was going to transition my fun health fact of like gut brain access and neurons into artificial intelligence being implemented into our brains, which is probably,
was that going to happen in the way?
Well, it's going to happen within the next year or two, but we'll save that conversation. But you know, it's going to probably be approved for human trials in the next year or so. So we're going to start doing, we're going to be implanting.
Quick question. Will you sign up for it?
No. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, maybe. But no, initially it's just going to be for people who have lost nerve function. So either through like stroke or epilepsy, or they've lost like limb function, they'll do these implants that are going to essentially like make up for lost synapses, right? So like a blown circuit, if you will. It's going to be like a circuit replacement. That's like Gen 1. But Gen 10 is going to be like replace language. Like we won't have to talk anymore. We'll be connected digitally.
Well, it's weird though, just thinking about it from where I'm at, my perspective, I know these people are super smart. Elon Musk is super smart.
Yeah. So this was the news bit I was going to talk about. Nick took up all of our time by talking about some kind of COVID virus that apparently is going around. I was going to talk about how tech mogul Elon Musk is, according to him in an interview recently, probably about a year away from human trials on what he calls Neuralink. Yeah, that's what it's called, Neuralink, where you're going to drill out part of your skull, put a little plug with little wires that go into your brain, and initially can just replace lost function from brain damage, but could eventually replace, language and also eliminate the need for phones because we'll be plugged into our phone. It will.
I will say on the most part, like I trust Elon seems to be pretty responsible for the most part, at least more responsible. He seems to make fun of other companies for not being responsible about their stuff, specifically sure. Google apparently.
Yeah.
But I will say though, okay, you give them the smartest people. I know people say Stanford is like one of the best hospitals in the world, but I get all kinds of neurological patients from Stanford and I give them really simple fixes. And here's the scariest part. I'm not that smart. Okay. And I know that I have a lot of weak points. So it's crazy when you start to say, okay, we're going to put something in someone's mind that's going to do something, someone's brain that's going to do something, and start messing with that. It's like, I think it feels to me like we're way off. Like we've got a long time before we can do that really effectively. But I guess that's the idea behind let's do it with human trials. Let's see what happens. Although those people probably are going to have some long-term repercussions of whatever they do,
Counterpoint, Nick. Not counterpoint to you not being smart. I can't argue against that. I got nothing. But the counterpoint being collectively, we're smarter than we are individually. So like corporations are or have the ability to be smarter than the individual. And that's not to say that the individual can't outthink groupthink. Like, that was last week's podcast, right? We very much talked about how one person outsmarted, like, mainstream medical community. But, you know, referring to Elon Musk, like, he doesn't know how to build rockets and, like, design a rocket that, like, can dock with, you know, the International Space Station. But SpaceX, a corporation he's the CEO of and founder of, can.
Yeah.
You know, they have thousands of employees. And collectively, as a group, they have the intelligence to pull that off. But him as a person doesn't have the intelligence to pull it off. Does that make sense?
But yes, that I understand your counterpoint, but I'll rephrase what I'm saying. Collectively, Stanford Hospital Neurology, collectively, UCSF Neurology, does not perform well enough for me to have total faith in the fact that whoever they're hiring to tell them about neurology is totally smart enough to give them all the everything that to see through all the holes in what they're doing on a technological basis.
Okay. Yeah. So there's a problem in assumptions. So when it comes to mechanistic thought, you can build great models and you can make algorithms, but they're going to based on like an initial assumption. So like even like the breast science still boils down, if you really think about it, to a belief system, right? An assumption. And sometimes that assumption is almost impossibly to argue against, but a lot of times it's not. And so the algorithms, right? The science is only as good as the initial assumption going into it. And Nick, you are a highly successful doctor and physician and caretaker of people. I don't mind boasting about you, man. You're my bro, but also objectively, you get results. But you are not the result of your individual brilliance. You are also the result of a collective brilliance from all of your mentors and researchers and people that you've built off of, right? And so,
absolutely
in a way,
true.
You're only as good as the access you've had to some of this intelligence, right? This information. So imagine if you can far more quickly gain access to this collaborative intelligence and research that didn't require all the time and effort that you put into being the caretaker that you are for your clients and patients. Does that make sense?
So wait, are you arguing for the Neuralink, or are we arguing about the like the possibility of the Neuralink being good?
I'm arguing that it could be really good. And I'm also, you know, I'm very weary of the fact that we could be implanting things with like Bluetooth or whatever future advanced version of Bluetooth capabilities like into our brain directly to affect neurons. Because something that I think Elon Musk also argues for is this idea of like a mind virus. Okay, so let me elaborate. I'm looking at Nick's face. So a mind virus isn't like, you know, like mad cow disease or something like prions. I'm talking about the like ideas and how an idea can corrupt, right? So in like a smaller setting, think like a cult, you know, or a cult leader that can like convince people to like commit mass suicide or something like that. That's like a type of mind virus, right? So this collective think that's dysfunctional or disruptive or unhealthy or, you know, whatever. So Elon Musk is concerned about this, and that's like the problem with, you know, globalization, right? This idea how everybody in the world through the internet, right, through this like artificial nervous system of our planet can connect to a thought or an idea. And if it's a bad idea that's compelling enough and enough people connect to it and embrace it or implant it as part of their being or their means of operation, that's a mind virus. That makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
And so he has concerns about this just from globalization. I don't know his comments necessarily on the fact of like implanting people with Neuralink, this like highly advanced tool for healing, but the idea of how it's possibly vulnerable to cyber attacks or something like that. I don't know. Well, but I like the idea of a mind virus, especially right now. I think obviously, infectious disease is a big deal. And, you know, a lot of lives, a lot of families suffering from losses, but thoughts can be hyper damaging to societies and to people's lives. And thoughts can also be very rewarding. Like a really good mind exercise to elaborate on this is just like, if I tell someone who's suffering from poverty or they're just like crushed with debt or whatever, and I say, hey, what if I told you I'm gifting you this magical suitcase? It's going to be in your closet and it's never going to run out of money. Okay. So it's going to be in your suit. It's going to be in your closet. When you need it, you can pull cash out. It's never going to run out. If that person believes that, they're going to immediately be happy. And they're not happy because they're rich. They're happy because they think they are. All right. Just an idea. It's a thought. It's not real. Maybe that is real. Maybe I did have that. And then when they get to use that, then they can shape their life accordingly. I think that's really important to think as just like, I guess in the context of a mind virus, it's just like impressions and thoughts and belief systems are super important to well-being. Maybe we end the podcast on that.
That's a good wrap right there. Well, everyone, if you're looking of where to find us, you can look in the show notes right below where you're listening to us.
Yes.
More specifically, you could email us at thecultivatedbeing@gmail.com. You can find Jake at Dr. Dr. Jake Hyde on Instagram, or his website, I think, is drjakehyde.com.
That's correct.
You can find me at drnickhyde on Instagram.
Or you can book time with us too. Nick and I both, we have clients that we work with virtually.
We do.
So if you're out there and you're like, man, I could use someone one time, you can do that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Or if you want to fly us to where you are to work on you, that's also possible. It is. I mean,
yeah, it's not impossible.
I haven't like done that too many times, as in like zero times, but I'm open to it.
Yeah. So don't hesitate. Fly Nick out. Mm-hmm. It'll change your life. I can attest to that. Nick's changed my life. He's born 4 years after me, and it's never been the same.
Yeah. Can't say the same, Jake, because you were right, always Nick. There.
Well, may it always be so.
Well, I love you, Jake. And thanks for listening, everybody.
Love you too, Nick. Love you, listeners. You're loved for who you are, not because you listen to this pod. Let me make that very clear. Nick would still love you if you didn't listen anymore. So don't worry about that.
Yeah, so don't worry.
I'd consider it.
No more anxiety about that, okay? Thanks.
You can sleep deeply knowing Nick's love's unfading. All right. Bye, everybody.
See you.